Good morning and welcome. Thank you again for being with us online as we join together for worship this Sunday. You know, if you know me, you know one of the things that in life I love best are words. Words have this incredible power, and we don't really realize how remarkable this gift is. The ability to express ourselves in a way that other people get depth of understanding about what we're saying, what we're thinking, what we're feeling is an incredible thing. And of course, one of the really, really remarkable things about language is it's a never-ending process. The words that we use today are going to be somewhat different than the words people use, say, 100 years from now. We'll invent things, and of course, we'll have to come up with new things, new words for the things we invent. After all, you know, 50 years ago, we didn't have the words for internet or really most of the gadgets that we use today. Language continues to evolve, and one of the ways that language is a marvelous insight into humanity is the way language teaches us the way people think. Because as we create new phrases, new ways of saying things, new ways of communicating, it also indicates new ways of thinking about things. And so it's with that in mind that I want to sort of highlight a phrase that's come to be used within the last 10 or 15 years. And that phrase is virtue signaling. Maybe you've never come across the phrase virtue signaling before. Maybe you have. What a virtue signaling is when an individual says something, more often than not online, in a way that is designed to draw attention to their virtue, usually in opposition to somebody else's virtue, a way of saying, hey, look at me, I'm better than these people over here. Or oftentimes, hey, look at me, those people over there are very, very bad, so I must be very, very good. Virtue signaling can be done in a lot of different ways, and it has a lot to do with the way of the society that we live in today defines virtue, the way it defines goodness, and the way it understands the definition of good versus the definition of evil. And I have to say to you all right now, this is a very important thing for us to talk about in the 21st century, because as Christians, we have to recognize that how we define good is becoming very divergent from the way society defines good. The definition of good and evil is a sliding thing. If you were a Christian alive in the first century, your Roman neighbors would have defined you or me as evil. One of the reasons they would have defined you or me as evil is that, for example, we refuse to get absolutely out of our minds, drunkenly, blindly drunk, once a year for a whole week during the Roman festival of the Bacchanalia. They would have pointed to the Christians and said, see, they fail to honor the Roman gods. They fail to honor Bacchus. They fail to be good citizens and good people. Look at them over there in their evil soberness. Now, you and I might say, well, that sounds ridiculous. But of course, we live in a different cultural time. But the Christians had to understand that their definition of virtue, their definition of goodness, wasn't the sort of thing one could just signal, because it wasn't in keeping with the popular understanding of the day. So a person couldn't just say, look at me, I'm sober, I must be a good person, when the Romans looked at you and said, well, obviously you're sober, that's what makes you evil. Kind of crazy, but true. Now, in today's gospel lesson, we have two people who are demonstrating virtue. One who's demonstrating true virtue, and one who's simply virtue signaling. And of course, the bad guy in this story is none other than Judas Iscariot. Not his last time being the bad guy in any of the stories. And in fact, this story goes so far as to tell us that the reason that he was the very bad guy in this story was that not only was he the person who was going to betray Jesus, not only was the person who actively opposed Mary's deed of virtue, but he was a thief on top of it all. So here we have Mary. And she's serving God. She's serving God without shame. She's serving God without reservation. She's serving God with extravagance. She's brought this gift of spikenard, which is an oil that's made from the root of the spikenard bush. And it's this marvelous perfume. And she spent what would be modern day thousands of dollars to anoint Jesus' feet. And then she wipes it off with her hair. Now, when you came into a Jewish home, there was the expectation that someone would come and wash your feet. It's sort of like the Japanese custom of taking your shoes off and putting on slippers when you come through the door. That way, all of the stuff that you've trudged throughout in the world, you don't track into the house. Usually, it was a slave or a servant or the youngest child in the house who would just show up with a basin of water, wash your feet off, and you'd walk into the house and you wouldn't track dirt everywhere. In this case, though, Mary takes the job on herself. And she doesn't just stop at getting Jesus' feet clean. She washes them, she anoints them with this incredibly expensive oil, and she dries it with her hair. This is a fairly extreme example of service, but it's true virtue. It's giving of herself wholly and completely to God. And then you've got Judas on the other hand. Judas, again, who's going to eventually betray Jesus for a payout. Judas, who's kind of hoping for more money to go into the group's treasury because he's the treasurer and he steals from the treasury. Judas says, well, why didn't she take that money that she could have had from selling that oil and we could have given it to the poor? Virtue signaling. He's basically saying, hey, everybody, look at me. That person over there is a bad person. I'm a good person. I'm virtuous. They're not. Look at me. I'm so good. And that's the world. The world is Judas Iscariot. And, of course, the world is just as duplicitous as Judas was. Because, of course, we know Judas wasn't actually demonstrating actual virtue. He wasn't saying, oh, I'm so sad. I wish we could have given that money to the poor. He's saying, oh, I'm so sad. You know, we could have given that money to the poor, but I'd have probably stolen most of it. You see, he's at the most a hypocrite. At the worst, he's just a flat-out scam artist. But he wants the world to look at his virtue because the world defines virtue as what's on the outside of us. What can it see when it looks at us? Do we match up with this world's ever-sliding definition of virtue? And oh my goodness, how hard is it in the 21st century to keep up with what is the current definition of virtue? Because every time you blink your eyes, it's changed. Every time you open the newspaper, if you still do, or the internet, or look on your phone, the definition of right and wrong, true and false, valid and invalid, is this constantly changing landscape where nothing is clear and everything is obfuscated by this constant need to redefine virtue. Why do we constantly need to redefine virtue? Well, it's a smokescreen, because none of the world are actually virtuous. And if we look too long, too hard, with too clear of a definition, if that target stays put for too long, the cracks will begin to show. The faults will begin to be obvious. The reality will begin to dawn. So we have to keep moving that target left and right, up and down, all over the place, so that we have this constant shell game where our true nature's hidden. Look at me, today I'm vegan. Look at me, today I'm paleo. Look at me, today I'm gender fluid. Whatever it is that the world seems to think is the new virtue is nothing more than smoke and mirrors. There's no virtue to it at all. It's the virtue of Judas Iscariot, who says, why wouldn't you sell that bottle of perfume and give it to the poor? It's virtue signaling, and it's not the real thing. Anybody who pats themselves on the back and says, look at me, I'm an ally of this, that, or the other thing. Anyone who points to themselves and says, everybody look at me. I am better than these people over there. Everybody who identifies themselves based on whatever the world has thrown out for this split second in time as virtue and says, yep, that's me, is hiding. They're hiding their truth. They're hiding the truth that there's no virtue in them. And that's fair because we human beings don't. We're not inherently virtuous creatures. We're broken. We're sinful. Not a single one of us stands before the throne of God and says, here I am, I'm perfect. And then there's Mary. Mary doesn't virtue signal. She doesn't say, hey, look at me. She doesn't ask anyone to accept her in any way, shape, or form. Instead, she offers herself wholly and completely to God's service. She holds nothing back. She gives everything she has for Jesus Christ. This is true virtue. It's virtue that is founded on the bedrock of service to Jesus Christ. It is virtue that's founded on the bedrock that God's truth is ultimate truth. It's founded on the bedrock that human virtue is not found in exalting ourselves, but in humbling ourselves, standing before God, or in Mary's case, literally kneeling at the feet of God, offering our little, and we have very little to offer the Almighty, and knowing that God accepts it, that God accepts us, that God loves us, that when we offer ourselves truly, wholly, and completely, Jesus could have said, get away from me, woman, don't touch me. I don't need your perfume. I am the Son of God. I probably smell pretty good on my own. No. He says, let her do what she's doing. I accept your praise. I accept your worship. I accept your humble offering. And I accept you. See, this is what it means for a Christian to have virtue. It means for us to offer our hearts, our minds, our souls, our bodies to the cause of Jesus Christ. Because in that and in only that is actual truth found.